On the Record. I'm Senior Supervising Producer Maureen Harvey, in for Sheila Cast. Good morning. In 1910, Baltimore City codified racial segregation in housing into law, prohibiting African Americans from moving onto blocks where white residents were the majority. As the city grew, the Sewer Commission methodically avoided building infrastructure in black neighborhoods. That's one example laid out by historian Andrew Carl of how African-American taxpayers have been denied the benefits of their dollars. Andrew Carl is a professor of history and African-American studies at the University of Virginia. His research centers around land use, real estate, and racial inequality. Carl's new book is The Black Tax: 150 Years of Theft, Exploitation, and Dispossession in America. He'll be in Baltimore to speak about his book on Tuesday, April 16th at the Enoch Pratt Central Library. Welcome to the show, Andrew.
Thank you for having me.
Let's start with the basics. How do property taxes differ from income or sales taxes?
Well, they differ in one way in that you can own property but be unable to pay the tax on it, in the sense that, you know, if you have an income tax is taken when you make money, a sales tax is taken when you purchase something. But there can be scenarios where someone owns property, maybe that they inherited or for other reasons are simply unable to pay the taxes on it. The other important feature of property taxes that I focus on throughout the book is that they're a local tax. Both, you know, administered and distributed at the local level, and have been and remain remarkably immune to federal interventions. So those are, I think, two, you know, pretty important aspects of the history that my book tells.
And in the book, you trace racial inequality and taxation from Reconstruction to the Great Migration to the Civil Rights Movement to today. And I want to look at some of those early years. Black land ownership soared after emancipation. How did Southern states react?
Yeah, no, I mean, this is really one of the remarkable, you know, sort of stories of African American resilience in the wake of, you know, the failures of Reconstruction, African American, and also the broken promise of 40 acres and a mule. African Americans continued to acquire and accumulate land throughout the late 19th and early 20th century. But as they did, and especially as white supremacists regained control over county offices and elected positions, including local tax assessors, African-American landowners faced discriminatory overtaxation, which was a pervasive feature of sort of Jim Crow fiscal policy, as well as the threat of losing their land due to tax delinquency, which in some instances could be, you know, actually orchestrated by local governments who could, you know, sort of, you know, using their powers, steer people into tax delinquency and then sell their land for unpaid taxes.
You wrote about a black farmer in Prince George's County named Thomas Turner. What happened to Thomas?
Yeah, no, this is something I came across when I was doing research looking at tax sales in Maryland, and came across an instance where an African-American landowner who had his land sold for unpaid taxes that he contested were paid, and then, you know, came to find that the person who purchased the taxes and gained a deed to them was on his land, and he challenged that that ownership, which was fraudulently obtained, and was shot by the person who bought the land for taxes, and that person was acquitted in court.
And back up for me, what is a tax sale?
So in every state, if you don't pay your property taxes, the local government will place a lien on your property. Now, in a majority of U.S. states, including Maryland, what they do is they sell that lien, or what is often called a tax lien certificate, to private investors at what are known as tax lien sales. And essentially, the people who purchase these tax liens are paying that unpaid tax bill, but in return, they get to charge interest and fees on that debt, which if the property owner doesn't pay within a certain time frame, allows the person to claim their property. And in some states, claim it for the price of a single tax bill.
Baltimore City's 2024 tax sale will take place on May 20th. And for the past 3 years, Mayor Brandon Scott has exempted some owner-occupied properties from the tax sale. Why do you view this system as predatory?
Well, I mean, it is extremely profitable for the people who invest in this. If you play your cards right, you really can't lose. You either can obtain profit from the interest payments you can get, extract from a homeowner who's desperately trying to hold on to their home, or you can claim title to the property itself. So this system by design really sort of lends itself to sort of forms of predatory investing. And oftentimes in practice takes advantage of some of the most vulnerable and financially distressed homeowners. The people who are oftentimes most vulnerable to falling into tax delinquency are elderly persons, people who have inherited homes, folks who are not paying their property taxes through an escrow account like on a mortgage, but rather oftentimes people who own their homes outright. And so that, and are thus responsible for paying property taxes themselves. So this oftentimes, as a way of sort of handling tax delinquent property actually can have really disastrous effects and not really help solve the problem of tax delinquency either.
And in Baltimore, a person's home can go into tax sale for a debt of as little as $750 if the house is owner occupied and $250 for other properties. How have tax sales affected the wealth gap between white and black Americans?
Well, it's and in fact, the Baltimore Banner has done some really important coverage of this. I mean, it is, if you look at the tax sales in Baltimore, you find that the vast majority of the tax liens that are sold are in African American neighborhoods and are on owner-occupied properties. So even when families are able to settle their debts, that is still, a significant financial hit to a family. And, if you kind of go back in time, as I do in the book, and really show how African American homeowners and landowners have been disproportionately affected by these laws, and it's been really, an instrument of, immense profits for the investors, but much of it is extracted from or disproportionately extracted from black and brown neighborhoods.
This is On the Record. I'm producer Maureen Harvey speaking with University of Virginia historian Andrew Carl about his book, The Black Tax, which explores the racist underpinnings of state and local tax policy. You lay out many examples of how black taxpayers pay more while getting less, and instead their tax dollars subsidize a higher standard of living for white residents. Earlier, I mentioned sewer infrastructure. What's another example?
Well, I mean, the long history of inequality in school funding is really, one of the most prominent examples, and one that I sort of tell really going back to the Jim Crow era up to the present. In that, during, in the Jim Crow South, local governments, blatantly would take the tax dollars that African Americans were paying to local governments and redirect them toward white schools, grossly underfunding African American schools at the same time. And so, this was something that really challenged the many of the myths that whites used to justify the under funding of African American education during that era. They would often say, well, African Americans don't pay anything in taxes, and so therefore they don't deserve anything from the state. But in fact, anyone who looked at the numbers, and in fact, many who challenged the inequitable funding from W.E.B. Du Bois to even Booker T. Washington and others, would point out, and that you didn't have to look hard at the numbers to see that actually African Americans were subsidizing white education across the South throughout that era.
It's over and over and over that you support this argument, and yet we still rely on property taxes today. That's one third of Baltimore City's revenue comes from real property taxes. What is the mistaken belief about property taxes that is keeping us in this system?
Yeah, and I should, note that, I mean, that in theory, property taxes are, in a sense, a good tax in that it should be coming from those who own the most property and the most wealth. But in practice, oftentimes it has the opposite effect in that you see local governments often, and this is, across the country today, that lower valued properties tend to be overassessed relative to value compared to higher value properties. In fact, a study done by the University of Chicago recently found that that's the case in 97% of counties in the U.S. That effectively, property taxes are regressive. Now, when you combine that with the fact that it's well established that African American neighborhoods and African American owned homes are devalued on the open market because of race, and there's a an example just recently in Baltimore from my friend and colleague Nathan Connolly and his family in Baltimore who suffered from a racist appraisal on their home, and then they went and whitewashed their house, and lo and behold, it was valued much higher. And so this is a problem within housing markets across the country. But then it's compounded by the fact that then, those houses that are devalued on the open market are then at the same time overvalued when it comes to property taxes. So in a sense, African American neighborhoods and homeowners are kind of getting the short end of both sticks.
So how do we move away from this approach? What solutions do you see?
Well, one thing that I argue is that that we need to make the property tax less important in the sense of like less of a critical source of revenue for local governments. And what I mean by that is not to say that we should sort of get rid of property tax, but rather the federal government really needs to reinvest in local communities. They need to reinvest in public education at the national level, and ensure that every community in this country has the resources it needs in order to provide these critical services. The U.S. is really the only advanced federated nation in the world that does not have some sort of fiscal equity program that ensures that local communities have the roughly the same fiscal capacities to provide these critical needs like public education, like clean water and sewers, like parks and playgrounds, and all the things that local governments provide that currently today are very unequal across places. And it's due in large part to the fact that some places have lots of wealth and property and other places are lacking in that. And the result is that not only do you find that some communities have large tax bases and are able to shower their communities with ample services and great schools, and then others l are lacking in that. But it also leads to these situations where some of the most fiscally disadvantaged communities end up overtaxing their poorest and most vulnerable homeowners and engaging in other practices like, say, aggressively selling tax delinquent properties in order to get the revenue from that in ways that also then compound those inequalities.
In doing the research for this book, was there anything that surprised you?
Yeah, I mean, this was, one surprise after another. I mean, really from the start when I began working on this, just, learning how easily local property assessments could be manipulated, how notorious those practices were over time. And often, or actually, I should rather say that how hidden many of those practices were. How in many instances you could really, find these problems were hiding in plain sight. And for me, I think, as a historian who spent my career, studying and writing about the history of racial inequality, especially the history of racial inequality and segregation in housing markets, one thing that really surprised me from the outset was how little had been written on this aspect of those larger problems. And as I began to really dive into this history, just seeing how much it was connected to all these other issues that have concerned, both scholars as well as the larger public, like, say, the history of educational inequality and the struggle to ensure that high poverty communities have the resources they need to educate their children, and how these kind of forces that continue to perpetuate segregation in housing markets in many ways can be tied back to the tax systems we live under.
Andrew Carl is a professor of history and African American studies at the University of Virginia. His latest book is The Black Tax: 150 Years of Theft, Exploitation, and Dispossession in America. Andrew, thanks for speaking with me.
Well, thank you so much for having me.
On Tuesday, April 16th at 7 p.m., Andrew Carl will be at the Enoch Pratt Central Library. At the On the Record page, we have registration information as well as a link to the virtual broadcast. Short break on the record. When we're back, a Stoop story. I'm Senior Supervising Producer Maureen Harvey in for Sheila Cast. Stay with us.